Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, November 27th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Enough is Enough. Court grad traces road back from brink to DUI arrest on 39th birthday, from Urbana. The present Carlos Mosley received for his 39th birthday wasn't on his list, but it turned out to be the gift of a lifetime. He was busted for aggravated driving under the influence on January 10th, 2016. I fell asleep behind the wheel on drugs and alcohol. I was on a 3-day binge. When I got caught, I had just got probation for another DUI in Kankakee. I knew I was going to the penitentiary, no question about it. He knew the drill, having been to the Department of Corrections before, 5 times to be exact, for drugs, weapons, and driving offenses. So when the Chicago native's lawyer suggested drug court, Mosley agreed to be evaluated, not exactly knowing what he was getting himself into. He did know he was tired. Enough is enough. Do right or be a criminal. Mosley now knows exactly what drug court is and has a clearer vision of what life is like without alcohol, cannabis, Molly, and ecstasy. After 17 months of sobriety, the 40-year-old husband and father is about to graduate from Champaign County's drug court program. Although he hasn't had one setback since his clean date of June 26, 2016, Mosley is nervous about his future after graduation on Wednesday. I tell the counselor that's when my journey is going to begin, on the 29th. That's when the real world is going to hit me. He's one of 11 graduates of the 37th class of the self-help court overseen since its inception by Judge Jeff Ford. The proud papa boasts 277 graduates who have endured his tough love during the last 18 years. What really made me know Judge Ford wasn't playing was when I first went, I saw a guy get locked up for drinking a can of beer. I said, "They lock you up for that? And they might send you to the penitentiary," Mosley said. Right then and there, I knew drug court wasn't nothing to play with. I did inventory off the other knuckleheads. A streetwise drug dealer who also enjoyed using drugs, Mosley admitted that the 25-year-old version of himself wouldn't have been ready for drug court. There was no time for Prairie Center 4 times a week. When I was selling drugs, I loved the money. But after crashing his car into a ditch while high on alcohol and ecstasy on his birthday bender weekend, Mosley was ticked. When I woke up, I'm like, "How could you do this?" I was so upset with myself. I was almost home. I just wanted to eat and sleep. The police found me instead. Ecstasy wasn't his first love, it was Molly. Both are forms of the synthetic drug MDMA, which alters mood and perception. Mosley had been in prison for several years when he was released in 2013. Everybody coming in and out was telling me about ecstasy and Molly and how they make you feel like Superman. I said, "When I get out, I'm going to have to try that." I knew better because I hadn't done drugs in so long. Still, after his release from parole and with money in his pocket from a decent job, Mosley went from moderate weekend drinker to being a regular user of Molly. "I loved it. I never felt that way in my whole life. It was a feeling out of this world. I was so relaxed and so comfortable with myself," he said, the opposite of his usual self-image. "You could talk and be so friendly. You got $10,000 in your pocket. The next morning you got nothing in your pocket because you gave it away being so nice. After that, I was off to the races chasing that same high I couldn't ever get from that first day." Because it's a synthetic drug, Mosley said, you don't know what you're getting. People are in the kitchen throwing up anything. You could buy a bottle of bath salts and they would tell you it's Molly. A particularly bad experience with the drug changed his mind about Molly. "I stayed in the basement 3 to 4 days. I couldn't move. I was just sitting there, not eating. After the 3rd day, my wife took me to the ER. They shot me with morphine. That made me feel like me again. I went to sleep. No more Molly." But his next bad choice was ecstasy, a drug he said made him feel much more aggressive. You can be in the mood to chill and party when somebody might make you mad, and once you go there, you ain't coming back. I was violent most of the time. It would take 15 to 20 people to hold me down. It was ecstasy he was using when he crashed his car on US 45, leading to his arrest and his eventual sobriety. Mosley is now working through a temporary agency at a warehouse job, which he hopes will become permanent in a couple of months. He's also pursuing his lifelong passion for music by starting up his own DJ business. With the money he's not spending on drugs and alcohol, he bought a laptop computer, a mixer, microphones, lights, and speakers. He's just getting started, but has performed at a few events. Recognizing that at special events with music, there's often drinking and drugs, Mosley plans to not book any holiday gigs. In the meantime, he's trying to figure out how to be a father and a husband. His two children, 16 and 13, tease him about his current obsession with working out. Being fit, not drinking, eating right, and getting proper sleep are a lot different from the binges of ecstasy and Molly that kept him awake and not eating for days at a time. As for his wife, she's a bit nervous and learning how to live with a new person making decisions for himself. "I took my wife through a whole lot," Mosley said, noting he was in prison for a good chunk of their married life. "She knows I'm doing good. She is so used to me depending on her." Mosley is also ready for others to depend on him. He's moving his elderly grandmother from Chicago to Champaign so he can take care of her. "That's a big responsibility. She's like a newborn baby. That's going to help my recovery." Also on the front page, jobless rate down locally, and jobs too. Trend in October, same across the state from Champaign. The unemployment rate continues to drop, both locally and across the state, compared with a year ago. In the Champaign-Urbana metro area, the unemployment rate fell from 4.9% in October 2016 to 4.1% last month. In the same time period, in the Danville metro area, the rate dropped from 6.8% to 6%. And across the state, the unemployment rate plunged from 5.6% to 4.7% year over year, according to the latest report from the Illinois Department of Employment Security. It also dropped in all of Illinois' 14 metro areas and 102 counties. But despite the good news in Champaign-Urbana and Danville, both metro areas lost jobs. CU lost 600 non-farm jobs, dropping from 112,500 a year ago to 111,900 in October. Among the industries that added jobs in the CU over the same period, government, 400, information, 200, and at 100 each, construction, transportation, warehousing, utilities, financial activities, education, health services, and other services. Down were leisure hospitality, 600, wholesale trade, 400, retail trade, 400, professional business services, 200, and manufacturing, 100. In Danville, non-farm employment fell by 300, dipping from 28,600 to 28,300. Across the state, 18,200 non-farm jobs were added, increasing employment from 6,089,000 a year ago to $6,107,000 in October. A food fight's brewing as system changes. Some cry foul over great expectations from Champaign. Before the Bricks wood-fired pizza restaurant ever opened in South Champaign, its owners hit a pricey building snag with the local public health district. The contractor had planned to use the same kind of cabinet material, a wood veneer over composite, that was used at another Bricks under the same ownership near Indianapolis. But the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District wouldn't allow it, according to franchisee Thomas Skaggs. "They made us go to solid wood, and it created a huge expense for us and problems down the road, because the solid wood expands and contracts, and that all had to be repaired as well." The contractor assured him the veneer material is used routinely in other restaurant build-outs and couldn't believe it wouldn't be permitted in Champaign. They said they had not heard the same thing at any buildings in their history anywhere. In Champaign County, legal oversight over new restaurant construction and remodeling plans, down to what's on the menu, falls to the environmental health staff of the CU Public Health District. The intent is to make sure structures, equipment, and food preparation processes comply with sanitation codes. The health district also routinely inspects 1,300 food establishments throughout the county. The district's environmental health director, Jim Roberts, contended his department carries out these responsibilities fairly. But not everyone believes local enforcement measures are reasonable. State Senator Chapin Rose said he's heard horror stories from food business operators who'd rather not voice them publicly. Among the 10 counties in his district, Champaign County is the only one in which he gets complaints from food businesses and area mayors about interactions with public health. Part of the reason it gets to me is they're afraid of the retaliation and they want to gripe to somebody, but they're afraid to gripe to the public health district. One complaint arrived at his office from a provider of food service at fraternities and sororities in multiple states, including some on the University of Illinois campus. It took months to come to a resolution, which eventually resulted in the business moving its food preparation to a private commercial kitchen and a couple of job losses. The food vendor told him it had never run into an issue like this elsewhere. This company said this is the hardest place to do business and deliver a service, even though they never had any issues with their product. Rose recalled another issue arose at fraternity and sorority houses concerning the longtime practice of leaving so-called late plates of food in refrigerators for students who don't make it back in time for meals. The public health district now requires the plates to be individually wrapped and labeled with times and dates. While he understands the need for food inspections and enforcement for public safety, Rose views Greek houses on campus to be private properties. Quite literally, we talked to several public health districts and they said, how do they have any authority to enter? Millions of people are sickened in the U.S. every year after they eat contaminated foods, some of them at the hands of restaurants and other commercial food operations. What could go wrong with leftover macaroni and cheese, for example? It contains pasta, and when pasta is cooled improperly, it can become contaminated with bacteria that can make people ill. When the health district began inspecting fraternity and sorority food operations earlier this year, some of the things they found from these catering services were horrendous. He couldn't say whether his department is more strict than other local health agencies on enforcement, but Roberts did say, I do believe we are fair. City of Champaign Township Supervisor Andy Korstrom, a member of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Board, described the district's enforcement as both strong and by the books, and that benefits restaurant consumers. He could recall just two restaurant operators complaining to the board about inspections and enforcement in the 4 years he's been a member. I would say that, based on the hundreds of establishments public health inspects, that's pretty good. Korstrom also witnessed the inspection process himself, accompanying health inspectors on the job, and has found the process to be handled fairly. It's important to keep our public safe, and this is part of the process. Fellow board member C. Pius Weibel, also the Champaign County Board Chairman, could recall just one restaurant operator complaining to the board. Weibel said Roberts has gone out of his way to make sure his inspectors are doing their jobs on an equivalent basis. If they're doing their job properly, that's a good thing. On the other hand, if there's an outbreak of neurovirus, who is going to get blamed for it? Restaurant inspection changes are on the way, courtesy of the new two-part food code adopted in Illinois last year. One change will incorporate the Food and Drug Administration's 2013 model food code, and the other will include changes specific to this state. When the old code in place since 1976 and parts of it updated over the years, this is expected to be a significant change when it goes into effect either next July or at the start of 2019. On the way is a new inspection form and more emphasis on the kinds of violations that can cause foodborne illnesses, though how inspections are done and how frequently won't necessarily change. He and his department have been preparing all year. They've held 20 open houses about upcoming changes, some of them in Spanish, and have been meeting one-on-one with hundreds of restaurants. Some details remain to be worked out, but the changes will put an end to the numerical scoring system used for decades on inspections. Compliance will be based on the number of current and repeat risk factors and public health intervention violations. One of the first things inspectors will inquire about when they call on restaurants is the person in charge of the operation at the time. And that person will be expected to demonstrate certain knowledge. Some of what's also coming are new disclosure and reminder requirements regarding consumer advisory notices about potentially hazardous raw and undercooked foods, a requirement that hand washing reminder signs be posted for food employees, something already done at many establishments, and some new management employee reporting responsibilities regarding employee illnesses. The new inspection form will likely mean asking more questions in inspections. I don't know if it's going to be more stringent, but it's going to be more detailed. As public health continues to prepare for the change, Roberts said public feedback remains welcome. It would be really nice to hear what consumer expectations are. Leading up to the change, U of I Food Science and Human Nutrition Professor Matthew Staswitz has been working with the district looking at previous year's restaurant inspection reports and how these same establishments would have fared had the new inspection form been used. Stawitz and a graduate student are also looking at a decade's worth of previous local inspection reports to determine whether there has been any bias in the inspection process. They hope to see from the data whether there is variability within the county. If there is any evidence of bias, they'll look at identifying it and how to resolve it. Thomas Nigels, one of the sous chefs at Biaggi's restaurant in Champaign, said that restaurant, and he believes most restaurants in the community, get along with the public health district fairly well. What it really comes down to is the individual inspector. I've worked with tons of them in this town, and I'll say 9 out of 10 are perfectly reasonable. Those who may not be tend to be brand new at the job. The Biaggi staff has met with the health district to go through the new code changes. It seems that they've been very proactive with it. Rose doesn't believe everything the public health district does concerning food businesses is wrong. I do believe they are often heavy-handed and shoot from the hip. He recalled a restaurant owner in Champaign County being shut down for weeks after buying the business while the health district required equipment and menu changes. I'm fully cognizant that commercial kitchens need inspection, and I think everybody recognizes that. There's a huge difference between sanitation that is up to speed and telling an owner to take certain items off their menu or telling them they can't sell certain items. That's none of their business. Some half dozen rural mayors in Champaign County have told them local restaurant operators complain to them about dealing with the public health district, and none of them want to come forward out of concern that it could bring heavier-handed restaurant inspections. Roberts and Korstrom said any fears restaurant operators have of retaliation if they voice complaints are groundless. I absolutely don't think there should be any concerns about retaliation. He and Roberts encouraged anyone with concerns to bring them forward to discuss. I think we are open to having people contact us, and this has happened many times. Roberts described the inspection and plan review process in Champaign County as a mature program. We have people with experience. We have programs that have evolved over time. Also from Champaign, bike share program could wheel its way here. A bike sharing system may be rolling its way into town without public docking stations in tow. Next week, the City Council will hear initial options for launching a bike share system, unlike one in Chicago, where riders return bikes they rent to a limited number of parking stations in the city. The Champaign program would instead allow riders to return them anywhere bikes are allowed publicly, including any rack in town. Dockless system operators equip each bike with a GPS so that they can be accounted for and shown to potential riders on an app. The app also locks and unlocks the bikes with a code or identification number. It seems pretty cool to me, and it goes with the walkability of Champaign, Councilwoman Clarissa Nickerson Foreman said about dockless bike share. User cost will depend on what each system operator charges, but most average a few dollars per 30 minutes. Some operators expressed interest in Champaign-Urbana and the University of Illinois this August. Since then, staffers investigated three cities that have dockless bike share programs: Seattle, Washington, D.C., and South Bend, Indiana. They noted in a report to the City Council that none of the cities provided financial assistance to system operators. One area where the city might get involved is with regulation. Although state law doesn't require it, there could be a bike fleet specifications, pre-established parking locations, time limits for system operators to remove damaged or improperly parked bikes, and data sharing between city and operator. One possible drawback of going dockless is street or sidewalk congestion from parking all the new bikes. After visiting South Bend, city staff said in the report that there weren't significant parking problems. Dockless system operators include Lime Bike, Spin, and Mobike. Public input on this subject will be accepted at Tuesday's meeting. The City Council will vote on whether to continue pursuing this and get more specifics on regulation options. And from the local page, Tom's Mailbag. First, baseball fans, Cub fans in particular, are invited to join the Champaign-Urbana Baseball Stalwarts in the Parade of Lights on Saturday. They were a part of the parade that went through downtown Champaign. PACA members are trying to block the Champaign Central High School expansion by getting historical designations for buildings the district has bought. Dr. Howard is again expected to be demolished. It would help the school district and the city as a whole if groups raised timely objections to development instead of unveiling a surprise objection late in the process. Have PACA, other community groups, or individuals made objections to the Dr. Howard Elementary renovation? Here's the response from PACA Executive Director Thomas Garza. The notion that PACA raised a surprise objection late in the process is absolutely untrue. From the very beginning of the Tier 2 planning, PACA made our concerns about the historic nature of the surrounding neighborhood known, and we also attempted to work with the district at every available opportunity. It was only when it finally became clear that the district had no intention of taking our concerns into account that we were compelled to take a different approach and widen our appeal beyond the board itself. As to the questions about Dr. Howard, several groups, PACA included, have raised concerns about the plans for Dr. Howard. We have, of course, pointed out that there are other options that could and should be considered. However, we are aware that in this instance, it may not be possible to reasonably save the original building, and so barring new information that changes the situation, there are no plans that I am aware of to contest this. That doesn't mean that we are comfortable with the district's purchasing of surrounding properties for land banking, however, and if we can ever manage to get the district to plainly state what their plans are for these houses, we will certainly object if the intent is to expand outwards from their original footprint into the surrounding neighborhood. Assuming that the district allows the same game plan they used with Central, we won't know until late in the process what their intentions actually are. And for the record, PACA and many members of the surrounding neighborhood have already informed the district in no uncertain terms that we strenuously object to their expanding the Dr. Howard campus west past James Street, and so if and when we do so publicly, I hope it will not surprise anyone. What are your thoughts on an indoor go-kart track in the Champaign-Urbana area? It would be fun, and it would likely lose money. The only similar businesses nearby are in Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, and the Fort Wayne areas. We are season ticket holders and support Illini Volleyball. What are parking plans for future seasons? We hear the South Grass parking area is going away. Is that true? Yes, that area will be closed to parking during the 2018-19 season because of construction on the Seibel Center for Design. Ground will be broken for that $48 million building to be located on the grass field south of Huff next spring. And finally, there's a lot of fence around multiple properties on the northeast corner of Springfield and Madison. I was just curious as to why. The city has a demolition permit application for the church building said Larry Happ, Champaign's building safety inspector, but a permit application for a new development has not been submitted. Bruce Knight, Champaign's planning and development director, said the property was rezoned to neighborhood commercial some time ago when it was thought a CVS drugstore was going there. The chain decided against that location, and the owners have been looking for a new use. Nothing has been announced yet, but it would appear that they are preparing to develop the site for commercial use. Habitat taking donations at future site of Restore from Danville. Habitat for Humanity of Danville officials hope that people think of the chapter's work to provide safe and affordable housing in the community and its current renovation on Giving Tuesday. The local chapter will be accepting cash or check donations from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Everything we collect will be used to renovate the interior of our new building. Giving Tuesday is a global day of giving, which was established in 2012 by New York City's 92nd Street Y in partnership with the United Nations Foundation. Much like Black Friday and Cyber Monday, kickoff of the holiday shopping season, this day kicks off the charitable season when many focus on their holiday and end-of-year giving and encourages people to donate their time, resources, and talents to address local challenges. After a two-year search, Danville Habitat officials closed on the 35,000-square-foot Vermilion Street building to house its home improvements store. Before they move the inventory from the current store, the new site's interior will need extensive renovation. We're still shooting to have the move completed in June, but that's going to depend on a lot of things coming together. He added the organization will hold another volunteer work day from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. in early December. The date will be announced soon. If anyone could give us a couple of hours or the whole day, that would be great. They can also come in on any day. We're there most of the days during the week, and we have lots of opportunities for skilled and unskilled volunteers to help. From Chester, Virginia, three murdered suspect arrested. Police say a man shot and killed his wife, her daughter, and the daughter's boyfriend at their Virginia home Thanksgiving night. Chesterfield County Police said in a statement that officers were called to the home in Chester late Thursday for a reported alarm. Officers found 58-year-old Jeanette Gaddis, her daughter, Candace, and Candace's boyfriend, 36-year-old Andrew Berthorn, dead of gunshot wounds. Police found Jeanette Gaddis' husband, 58-year-old Christopher Gaddis, at the scene and arrested him. Gaddis is charged with three counts of first-degree murder and is being held without bond. Police described the crimes as domestic-related. An Indiana man and his dog reunited. An Indiana man who thought he'd never see his dog again after it vanished in September has been reunited with the pooch, which was 200 miles away in central Michigan. Gene Valdez of Elkhart, Indiana, spent 2 months periodically checking a local animal shelter for his Brittany Spaniel, Rock. But then his nephew contacted the Cass County Humane Society, located about 10 miles away in Kannapolis, Michigan. He learned that Rock had been rescued and was eventually moved to the shelter in Saginaw, more than 200 miles northeast of Elkhart. Valdez picked up Rock there last week. He tells the Elkhart Truth his other Brittany Spaniel, Megan, is happy as can be. Her companion has returned. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, November 27th. Please stay tuned.